My name's still Bob H., and I'm still an alcoholic. Good morning. I'd like to say that there is no truth to the rumor that I refuse to come down here unless they let me speak twice. I hope this won't fall under the heading of cruel and inhuman treatment to alcoholics, but I really am grateful to have this opportunity of talking a little bit about general service. And I'd like to compare general service, to start out with, to an iceberg. And I think too frequently all we see of service in AA is, or too frequently all we think of, is the General Service Office in New York. Now this is just the tip. This is just the visible part of the iceberg. But I think it's important to remember that this only represents about 1/9 or 1/10 of the service structure. However, since it's visible, and for the benefit of those of you who perhaps are not too familiar with the services that are provided at our office, at your office, the General Service Office, let me just run over some of these for you. And to those of you who are familiar with these services, perhaps you'll bear with me. I might just mention one or two that you're not aware that we do provide. I mentioned yesterday in my talk that I found myself in a in a little, shall we say, rest home out on Long Island in 1942, and decided the time had come for me to do what had been recommended to me 2 years before, and that was to get in touch with AA. And you'll recall I had forgotten, I didn't know how to get in touch with them, and I asked a doctor at this place, the Long Island Home was the name of it. I asked him if he could get the address. Well, I asked him first if he thought I should get in touch with these people, and he had fortunately heard of AA, and he said yes, and he agreed to get the address for me. And as I told you yesterday afternoon, I wrote to Box 459, Grand Central Annex, New York, 17, New York, and I got an answer from him. And I didn't think, of course, at the time, I'm like most, not only alcoholics, but most people, I tend to take everything for granted. So that was the beginning. That was the beginning of it for me. That's where it all began, when I wrote to Box 459. It wasn't until many, many years later when I began to do some volunteer work over there at the General Service Office that I stopped to think about this address, this Box 459, which had made it possible for me to get in touch with AA. Somebody had to arrange the post office to get a box, and it had to be somebody to get the mail and answer it, open it and answer it. And, well, these are the sort of things, of course, you take for granted. But what came of that letter, which I addressed to Box 459, certainly was not to be taken for granted, because this meant my life. This was my sobriety. If there hadn't been any box, if there hadn't been any way for me to get in touch with AA, if nobody'd known how to get in touch with them, I wouldn't be here this morning, and a lot of you wouldn't be either. So I wrote to Box 459, as I told you, and I got an answer, and I did as they suggested, and I went around and talked to them. And when I wrote that letter, that began, it's a good starting place for me to tell you a little bit about the services we provide, because this is the first and most important service, I think, and it has been historically down through the years, is correspondence. And then at that time, Bill had an office down on Vesey Street in New York, and he had a secretary, and that was it. And of course, the name of it wasn't the General Service Office. It didn't have any name. It was just Bill's office, and Bill and Bobby answered all the mail and did everything else. Bobby typed the letters, and whatever had to be done, they did. So that correspondence has always been the bedrock on which all service has been based, because this is the most frequent means of communication within the fellowship. And I think, too, illustrates the principle on which the General Service Office operates. You know, I hope that none of you think that the General Service Office runs things in AA, because they don't run anything. We don't run anything. What we are and all we are, and those of you who may have seen our film strip will remember we tried to make this point in that film strip. We are an information exchange. We are a service sharing center. And that is all we are. We don't establish policy up there. We don't make important decisions. All we do is share experience. Because individuals in the beginning and later groups, all over this country first and then Canada, and very soon in other countries as well, and today, as you know, in 90-odd countries all over the world, there are AA groups, and we correspond with all of them, 14,000-plus groups that we correspond with. Now, this is a lot of work. We don't correspond with all of them every day, obviously, or we'd have to have a staff of about 1,000 people up there, but we at least twice a year, and most of them, of course, far more frequently than this. So that we do have a vast fund of information there. You have it. This is your experience and your information that we can pass along to wherever it's wanted and to wherever it's needed. So group correspondence, then, is our first function. Correspondence, not necessarily group, individual, too. Correspondence with individuals and groups, because it's through this correspondence to a great degree that we are able to acquire the accumulated experience which we have accumulated from the fellowship. Well, naturally, since we're a service organization, we're a service office, we try to provide help to new groups. And today we do have a kit that we send out to any new group, to all new groups anywhere who register with us. And this includes the group handbook, complimentary supplies of literature, and other material which will be of aid in establishing a group. Now, spatial groups occupy a considerable amount of our attention, our contact with groups in institutions, in hospitals and prisons, and I think we have seen this dramatically exemplified here this morning. With Ernie's presence on this platform, you've heard something about what is being done right here in Georgia in prisons. And I don't think I have to tell you how important this is. So that we do correspond with and have special services that we try to provide to groups in prisons and in hospitals. And then another service we provide, of course, is service to, and this is perhaps in a sense spatial groups, service to groups overseas. And this, of course, requires that we have translators who can translate the letters that come in many, many languages into English and then translate them back again into many languages. It also has required that we translate a great deal of our literature into foreign languages, and most of you know we have our literature, I believe, available now in 30-some languages, at least some literature. And in some languages, we have a great deal of literature available. In Spanish, for example, we have really all of our literature available. All conference-approved literature is available in Spanish. So that this is an important function of this service office, which you people operate and support up in New York. And we have worked with, this goes right back to the beginning too, worked with loners and internationalists. Well, I know something about this because, as I think I may have indicated yesterday, 4 months after I came into AA, I was drafted, and the next 3.5 years I was in the Army, and except for a couple of furloughs or leaves when I got home, got back to New York, most of that period I was a loner, in the sense, obviously, not that I was alone, I sure wasn't alone, but I was alone as far as AA was concerned, that is, I was alone as far as contact with AA was concerned. So I know how important it was. I got letters from this office as well as from some friends in New York, and I remember the tremendous thrill I got and the wonderful sense of security it gave me when the first issue of The Grapevine came out. I was in the Hawaiian Islands at that time, and it was a wonderful thing for me to get that first issue of The Grapevine. I don't want to give the impression, I should say in passing, that this is the Grapevine is not issued by the General Service Office. The Grapevine is a separate corporation, but it's a sister operation that is owned, really, if I may use that word, by the Board of Trustees. Now, we run a publishing business, too, up the General Service Office. It's a thriving business, a thriving little business, and it's not so little either. Next year, we may well have a gross of $500,000 in conference-approved AA literature, and this includes both books and pamphlets, of course. But this is a business operation, obviously, and I might say it's a profitable one. And a good thing it is, too, if the fellowship believes in and wants the services that they have told us they do, because it wouldn't be possible to provide these services if we didn't have the profit from the publishing operation to depend on. This is what makes it possible to provide many of these services. This is what makes up the difference between the cost of these services I'm talking about and the contributions which we receive from the groups to support them. A little later I'll talk a little bit about this matter of whether the groups want these things or not and how we know they want them. Now, we put out, in addition to conference-approved literature and 4 hardcover books, 5 if you want to consider the pocket edition of 12 and 12 as a separate book. Our newest one, as you know, is AA Way of Life, and for those of you who may not have seen this, I think that if you do look at it, you would want it. However, I'm not here to sell books. We put out a directory, as most of you know. In fact, now there are going to be 4 directories. We have a separate prison directory and a separate hospital directory, and beginning in 1969, we're going to have the world directory will be broken into 2 parts. There will be one directory, be World Directory Part 1, which will be the United States and Canada, and World Directory Part 2 will be all the other countries in which AA groups are. We've done this for a lot of reasons that I don't have time really to go into here. In the first place, it's we can affect economies in mailing costs by doing it this way, and also we're able to find out that this was considered by the fellowship a good idea. In fact, we always find that out, as I will try and tell you a little bit more about in a few minutes. And then we carry on a very regular and heavy correspondence with central offices and intergroups, and because we need to know their experience, and we do share experience with these offices at the local level. I think that's fairly self-explanatory. I don't have to talk too much about that. Well, another responsibility we have that you have charged us with is securing financial support for these services. And as I've already indicated, this you support these services with your contributions, and we also are able to make up the deficit between contributions received and cost of services by utilizing the profit, the net, from the publishing operation. So it's our responsibility there, the responsibility that you have charged us with, to provide AA with a with these services and with a safe future. We try to coordinate program arrangements for the annual meeting of the General Service Conference, which, as you know, is held every April, and which Joe here mentioned. He was up there this past spring. And I think you do have a pretty good idea of the importance of this. This is obviously was established for one reason only, so that the General Service Office in New York and the trustees could know what the fellowship was thinking, what their needs were, what their opinion was about matters which might be controversial. So we are charged with that responsibility of developing, with help, of course. Obviously, we have help with all of these functions from you. We have help from the delegates in all of these areas and from the trustees. We've got lots of help. Then we try to help out on regional get-togethers with suggestions on programming, and you're kind enough frequently, by you I mean AA, all over the country, well, all over the world, to ask trustees, and usually delegates are available to participate in these programs, state and area programs, and also people from the General Service Office. So this is very good. It gives us an opportunity to talk to AAs from different parts of the country and find out firsthand what the problems are and what's been done about them. We have an international convention every 5 years, and you have charged us with the responsibility for programming this convention. The next one, as I think you know, will be in Miami Beach in 1970. This will observe the 35th anniversary of AA. And I might just mention in passing that registration, the first registration for this, for our international convention in Miami, scheduled for 4th of July weekend of 1970, will be at the Southeastern next year, first registration. This will be registration only, will not be housing. That will not be available until later, probably around the first of the year, 1st of January 1970, probably. But the registration, and it will be, Dennis will be down at the Southeastern next year to handle registrations. Well, we work with the press and broadcasting media and film companies from time to time at the General Service Office. And again, this is something that strikes home to me, because again, one of the things I took for granted in my early days in AA, and that I later came to realize, somebody had to be responsible for it, and that was the Jack Alexander article in the Saturday Evening Post in 1941. I told you yesterday, my mother sent me this article, and I was furious and read a little bit of it and tore it up and threw it away, but nonetheless, I remembered it, and I think today that too played a part in bringing me into AA, because I remember it so vividly. Well, somebody had to give this Jack Alexander the facts. Somebody had to try and see that what appeared in print was responsible and was authentic and didn't misrepresent the fellowship. Well, there wasn't any public information committee at that time, obviously. Bill did everything, just about. And He, of course, had a hand in that. Just another thing I took for granted. Same way, in addition to relations with the press and with the broadcast media, relations with outside organizations. And as you all know from your own experience, this is becoming more important because there are a lot more of these outside organizations. And we walk a rather narrow line here. It's easy to stray either to the right or to the left. We do, I think, fortunately, a long time back, with the help of the delegates to the conference and the trustees and many people and all over AA, we reached agreement on what our relationship should be with outside organizations. And we came up with a phrase that you're all familiar with, and it's the title of a pamphlet that we have, Cooperation but Not Affiliation. I don't have time this morning to talk about it, but I think you can all realize how important it is that we have a principle upon which we can all agree, because if we didn't, we'd be in a lot of trouble. We'd be accepting funds from outside organizations, perhaps from the government, as has happened in other countries, and it would just create all kinds of problems. So that to help guide us in these difficult areas, and this is a good illustration, these our relationships with outside organizations, we have guidelines which try to incorporate the consensus of the fellowship, how the fellowship feels, how we should conduct ourselves, what our policy should be in controversial areas. Now, these are not all of the services, but time is limited this morning. I just wanted to mention a few of them, some of them, but as I said when I started to talk here, the General Service Office is only a small part of the service structure in AA. There's a Board of Trustees, for example. And in the beginning, well, you know, Bill, I personally believe he was divinely inspired. Because one example of this to me is his very early recognition that he couldn't run this thing and that there had to be some body, some group set up to act as trustees for this fellowship. And he established that, as you know, in the late 1930s and in the beginning. In fact, until just a couple of years ago, the majority of the members of that board were non-alcoholics. And we had so many dedicated friends over the years who served on that board and who've done so much for us. And they have always been concerned about the fellowship, concerned as to whether or not they were doing what the fellowship wanted. And as a matter of fact, I just brought with me, because it seemed to be, I thought it was interesting, a bulletin which the Board of Trustees sent out to all the groups back in March of 1943, and I'm not going to read this whole thing to you, but I'd just like to read you a few little excerpts from it. And they start out here, and it says to all AA groups, and it's headed a request by the trustees of the Alcoholic Foundation, that's what it was called then, that their activities and policies be reviewed by the groups. It was before there was a conference, and they were worried up there. They were forced to make decisions, and they didn't know whether the decisions they made represented the wishes of the fellowship or not, and they wanted to find out as early as 1943, years before the conference was set up. And they said, all members have just received a leaflet describing the work of the Alcoholic Foundation and our AA Central Office here at New York City. This office, opened by the trustees of the Alcoholic Foundation in 1939, has looked after our national affairs since then. They say, as most AA groups now contribute to the support of the central office, the trustees have naturally assumed that the activities and policies of the foundation have met with general approval. Yet Alcoholics Anonymous has lately grown very large. This is 1943, mind you. There are about 10,000 members, I believe, at that time. grown very large, and since questions might arise as to the wisdom of foundation policies now in effect, the trustees would like to be advised if these policies do in fact follow the wishes of the groups. To enable the groups to express their opinions on these matters, a questionnaire covering the main points is enclosed. And they sent this questionnaire out, and the first question they asked was this one. Question one, does your group believe that the AA Central Office, as it was called at that time, at New York, does your group believe that this office is an effective and necessary part of our national program? And obviously had a majority of the groups written back and said no, that would have been the end of that office. And they asked if the groups believe that this office should continue to be supported by voluntary contributions from the groups. The alternative would have been to have gone to one of the foundations for support. I don't have to tell you the answers to these questions because you know what they are, what they were. Does your group believe that any publicity, literature, or project intended to have a national circulation or effect should first be submitted to our central office or to a trustee of the Alcoholic Foundation? And they ask other questions. I'm not going to read them all. But I just brought this along because it seems to be an excellent example of the concern that the Board of Trustees had in the very beginning, that they truly represent the wishes of the fellowship, the wishes of the groups, because the group, again, you know this, is the very cornerstone of this fellowship. Now, that's how the Board of Trustees felt in 1943, and that's how they feel today. There has been a change, as you know. A couple of years ago, the ratio of non-alcoholic to alcoholic trustees was changed. And now the board has a majority, actually two-thirds of the board eventually will be, and a majority now are, alcoholic trustees. In the beginning, the trustees were just sort of tapped on the shoulder and appointed by Bill because they had to make a start. But once the conference came into being, the selection of regional trustees, which was the only way that true representation from all of AA could be obtained, this was strictly up to the fellowship. It was up to the groups through the service structure, which was then in the process of being formed. And so regional trustees came into being so that the office in New York could have more regular information and advice from the groups. Incidentally, your regional trustee is here. I'm just going to ask him to stand up so you can see what one of these creatures looks like. Maurice R. Will you just turn around and give him a wave? I'd just like to say a word about the trustees, and I speak here specifically about the regional trustees, the AA trustees. All right, not just the regionals, the AA trustees, I'll say. Now, these men and women aren't elected by you to be your trustee as a reward for past services, nor should they be. They should indeed be elected to do what they do, work. They work. They do all kinds of work. They come to New York, as you know, on a quarterly basis, and they sit down and they talk with us who are at the General Service Office, and they bring us problems, they bring us their experience so that troublesome areas can be explored on a really continent-wide basis, and not only answers suggested but implemented, and they do a lot of the implementing too. So that this is not This regional trusteeship is not some sort of an honorary award. It's like all jobs in AA should be. They should be filled by people who not only are capable and can do the job, but who will do it. And we have been very fortunate. That is the sort of trustee we have. They do anything. There's one other thing that I'd just like to say about the regional trustees. Well, the board of trustees, for that matter. In addition to what they do, they have one other very important function, and that is they are. Just by existing, the Board of Trustees is and always has been your guarantee, a guarantee and a strong one, of the continuance of this fellowship. Because they do, in addition to the work they do, among the work, I should say, the things that they do, they review what we do at the office. And as one rather irreverent AA in another area once said, they help to keep those thieves up there in New York from stealing us blind. And indeed they do. I don't think that the member who made that remark meant it literally, because we try to operate in as businesslike a way as we can at the office. We have everybody bonded that handles money, and we carry adequate insurance, and we have all checks signed by at least two people, and so forth and so on. But indeed, the trustees are essential to the preservation of this fellowship. Well, long about 19... Actually, it began when Dr. Bob died. Bill's recognition of the fact that something more was needed, that the Board of Trustees at that time was doing everything they could, but that we still weren't getting frequent enough or broad enough thinking from the fellowship, and he set up a conference. And again, I don't think that I need to tell you too much about the conference. I believe the purpose of it, again, is obvious. It's an extension of what I just said, really, about the board. It is an attempt, well, I'll retract that word, because it's far more than an attempt. It's been a very successful endeavor to get the thinking of the whole fellowship on all problems that could affect the future of AA. And so we have delegates, there are 90 of them now, from every state in the United States and every province in Canada, that come to New York every April, review what the General Service Office and the Board of Trustees has done, and advise us, including the board, on matters that are of importance to Alcoholics Anonymous. So you see, this man, and I told you I personally consider him divinely inspired, this guy Bill, he set up a wonderful structure here, all of it concerned with service, but it incorporates a series of checks and balances, because these delegates don't just, they don't appoint themselves, they don't just say, I'm going to be the delegate now. They represent AA in their areas, whether they're states or provinces or part of states or provinces. And again, you're familiar with this. They are elected, as you know, for two-year terms. And they do, by their numbers and by their geographic location and by their dedication, they do what the General Service Office and the trustees can't do because of physical limitations and other reasons which are obvious. They deal with problems at the local level. They represent the groups in their areas. They are an essential part of the service structure within the state, working with the state or provincial committees or area committees, Which, incidentally, everything I've said about the trustees obviously applies to the delegates and the committeemen. None of these AA jobs ought to be filled as a result of a popularity contest or as a reward for past services. They ought to be filled by people who are anxious to work and who will truly represent AA in their areas. So the delegates do a great deal. They play an indispensable role in this fellowship, not only as a check in this system of checks and balances so that nobody can ever run AA, only the fellowship itself, but in the actual work they do. Now, Joe's interest is known to you, his interest in institution work, particularly prison work and what he's done. This is just one example. We've recently received from Joe, to use him as an example, and I hope you don't mind, Joe. He's a member of the Conference Committee on Revision of the Charter, and he has sent us many extremely useful suggestions. We're in the process of revising the Third Legacy Manual. We've gotten a lot of ideas from Joe, many of which I know will find their way into the final printed version. And then we have, as I say, we have the committeemen, and maybe this is the key to how effective AA is going to be in the area or state, because if they don't do their job, if they're not going to funnel this information back and forth, if they're not going to participate actively in service work, AA, I think, in that area will not progress as rapidly as it otherwise would. They too are elected by the GSRs. And now we're down to the group, because that's where it all started, with the group. And that's where it ends, really, responsibility. Everybody carries a share of this responsibility. We at the General Service Office, the Board of Trustees, the delegates and committeemen, and GSRs. But even they're only representing the group. So it starts with the group and it ends with the group. And if AA is to continue to flourish, and if it's to go on as we have known it, it's going to be the groups, up to the groups, because that's where the final responsibility is. Now, I think that we've made remarkable progress in this whole service area. You're familiar with most of these things, those of you who've been around a while. But I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I took so much for granted for so long. I was one of the keep it simple boys. And of course, I still believe we should keep it simple. But I don't want to see it kept so simple that it never changes, because it seemed to me that too frequently is the end result of keeping it simple. It means no changes. We live in a changing world. Conditions in which we do our 12-step work even are changing. There are younger people coming into AA. I don't think we can be so rigid that rigor mortis sets in. I think we have to keep our service structure flexible. I think the program itself, because I don't like to keep repeating this, but since I do think it, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous was inspired, as I've told you, I hope at least, that that's never going to be changed. I can't imagine why anybody would ever want to change it. And I wouldn't like to think that our traditions were going to be changed. Although nobody can foresee the future. And if AA goes on into the future, as I believe it will, maybe someday, the mechanism is there to change it if it needs to be. But this third legacy, this service legacy, it's a little more flexible. It can be changed. It's in the process of being changed right now. As I just mentioned, the Third Legacy Manual is being revised, and we'll probably have to continue to revise it as we go along, because service, how we can carry the message, is something that we have to do in the most effective way in which we can do it. And if we have to make changes in the service structure, why, we'll have to make them. And we do make them all the time. We always have. Well, there's not too much more I can say. You and I share one thing in common. Many things, of course, really. But in addition to our drinking problem, we share a love for AA. We have inherited a priceless legacy. I think that together we can preserve it. And I hope that it is God's will that we shall do so. Thank you.